Hello, I'm Genevieve Costigan, and welcome to Talking Teaching.
This is like a reflection of us focusing too much on the economical being of students. Schools have been trying to prepare economical beings to get a job, to drive the global economy, to gain global competitiveness, but we forget how to live together.
In this episode, the Dean of the Melbourne Graduate School of Education, Professor Jim Waterston, talks to Professor Yong Zhao, an international expert in the implications of globalisation, technology and leadership in education. In a unique innovation, Yong Zhao works for both the University of Kansas and the University of Melbourne. In this discussion, Jim and Yong examine what a post-COVID world could look like for education across the world, including how we educate young people to lead a purposeful life beyond just having a job. Over to you, Jim.
Okay, it's my pleasure to have Yong Zhao with us today, and it's great to have you online, Yong. Thanks for joining in the podcast.
Well, thanks, Jim. Happy to be here.
Can we start by talking about what I think might be a bit of a post-COVID phenomena, is that you've got this unique job now where you're paid by two universities for 6 months of the year. It seems unique to me from the higher education perspective. So do you think this is a forerunner to innovative opportunities that might exist in employment in a post-COVID world?
I would hope so. I think we started conversation about having two jobs before COVID become a pandemic, before it spread across the globe. But I think it should be. I feel like, this job has been great for me because I'm with two universities. I have two groups of colleagues, and it's complementary.
The other innovation around the job was it was meant to be two lots of 6 months. We've now been able to blend that together. So just talk a little bit about how you manage your time over the course of the 12-month period.
You're absolutely right. I feel like I am with both universities all the time because of COVID. Because of Zoom, and we have all universities closed up here in the U.S. I'm sure in Melbourne, you closed for a while. So I actually stay in Oregon, but I have more meetings now with colleagues, actually, from Melbourne and University of Kansas. And I'm in the department meetings with the University of Kansas all the time, really just to meet with a lot more people, get to know a lot more people than before.
So let's move on to the substantive issue really that we wanted to talk about today, which is about how schools have coped during the pandemic and what a post-COVID world will look like in education. So can you give us your perception, primarily from the US, but other countries that you've engaged with, about how schools have coped with the changes that they've been required to make during COVID?
Well, I think that the big change for all schools, if you look across everywhere, US, China, the UK, and Australia, even to a certain degree, is the addition of remote learning. Some places they are able to do, they have the technology to do online learning, but not every country, some African countries, even like China, and some, I think, in Malaysia, Indonesia, not all of the countries can do fully online because that required a lot more technology. But these countries have done television programming or radio programming. It's an interesting increase of remote learning. Basically, it's technology-based. I think that's quite precious to think about. So that's one big change. And the second big change is that it's students and teachers experiencing all this remote learning or online learning, which is shocking. Educational technology experts have been trying to convince schools that the technology can be useful, and for 20, 30, 40 years. But this is the first time almost universally every student and every teacher experienced that. And that experience, good or bad, but they had that experience. And the third one is that remote learning enabled students and teachers to understand that learning can take place without being in the same confined classroom or without being at the same school time. So this has enabled students, parents, and teachers to access resources from beyond the classroom. It has enabled them to collaborate across classrooms, even schools. It also has enabled the possibility of global collaboration for projects.
Yeah, sure. So just taking that a little bit further, you and I wrote an article in 2020 that was a little bit provocative that had the title COVID-19, A Catalyst for Change or a Retreat to the Past. So I guess we were trying to speculate about what would happen in the post-COVID era. What's your view in terms of the conversation that we're having now? Are schools going to continue to move forward and use digital learning in a different way and have opportunities that they didn't have before? Or are we going to just wait until this is over and sort of retreat back to where we were before?
Well, Jimmy, you and I actually wrote three articles together, you know. So right now, I think looks like, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel. And with the many schools eager to return to normal, globally speaking, normal, I'm very concerned about the normal, meaning they go back to school as if the pandemic never happened. So I think that we need to really think about, can we not get rid of remote or online learning? Can we redevelop that into something bigger and more collaborative? Can we engage global collaboration a lot more seriously, you know, than before? Can we rethink about what we were arguing about? Students are the owners of their own learning. How can we help students now with the global access to resources and learning partners? Can we enable students to truly engage in personalized learning, to personalize learning? Can we also get our students to do more project-based learning since we have the global partnerships, you know? Can we also get our students to be a lot more actively and become social activists in promoting global changes? You know, we've been thinking a lot about those issues, you and I.
And so one of the things that sort of drove us to write those articles was the idea that pre-COVID, there were already some deficiencies across large education systems throughout the world. And the idea was that we were trying to develop was that we needed to change anyway. And so COVID has helped us a little bit to catalyse that change or at least think about things that we need to keep doing. So what hope do you think there is about making, you know, necessary changes around curriculum and your idea that of student agency and the other things that we talked about? What hope is there of pushing through this pandemic, not knowing when it's going to finish? And also with the kind of issues that have arisen around well-being of teachers and you know, heavy workloads during this period, do you really think that we will be able to create the change required that we knew was necessary before COVID?
Well, I am not sure, Jim. I think, you know, I do see a lot of teachers, parents are looking to create new learning possibilities. I think that's what we see. We also see students are trying to become more leaders, but I don't know the percentage of that. I don't know how systems are ready. I think we have individuals on the ground who are already creating new learning possibilities. For example, those learning pods on, you know, Facebook, and there's a different various learning institutions founded by parents. I think that's happening, but those may be benefiting just the upper middle class parents, you know, not everybody. We also see a lot of the teachers, you know, having conversations, really, you know, almost every day we see them on Twitter, rethinking about education, collaborating with each other. But the question is that, are systems ready? If systems are thinking about going back, I think that's what's happening now in some U.S. states. They think about, well, you know, we are worried about student learning loss. Let's give them more tests. Let's bring back more standardized testing. From my observation, let's stop standardized testing or rethink standardized testing, administer in different ways. Don't force schools to teach to the test. Don't the students to learn to the test. We might have some changes. You know, another thing you and I, you know, kept talking about this is the schools of education. I know, you know, Melbourne Graduate School of Education has been leading new forms of assessment, new ways of innovation, but can we do more? I think this is a time for us probably to think about more engagement with the schools, more engagement with leading the big changes. However, just purely from myself to say, our school education is education going to change? I am not sure. Really, I think that needs good leadership. I'm concerned about leaders of educational systems not thinking about this great crisis as a great opportunity to redo, rethink education.
So your point about the Melbourne Graduate School of Education is right. We're actually trying to reform and rethink our Master of Teachers curriculum, and so that it is contextualised around a post-pandemic environment. So what is it about school systems that prevents them from being that flexible, but prevents them from really establishing those fundamental changes that most people would wholeheartedly support? How do systems sort of lose their way in that sense of being innovative and going forward?
If you think about educational systems, we tend to think about the ministers or the executive directors or those people or superintendents, they may be at the top trying to make big changes, but a lot of times big changes really happen in the classroom, happens in the school. Teachers and students are innovative if you can drive them to change, but the system itself like to prevent them. We like to promote one type of method, one type of pedagogy, one type of curriculum, one type of assessment. So therefore, we constrain that innovation. I think systems should really retreat from prescribing everything for our students. What if we only prescribe, let's say, 30% of the curriculum for students and let schools and students decide the other 70%? That might be more valuable. The 30% is absolutely what we need, for anyone to become a citizen. They have to become a knowledge, common skills, and common understanding, common social values. And then let's think about, again, assessment. Do we have to test every student every year? Probably not. How about if we try sampling the whole population if you want to understand the system quality? And if you want to understand the students' progress, what if we test them every 3 years? But also now when the COVID, what about, a broad statewide, professional development for teachers? Get teachers to understand the new purpose of education, the new context of teaching, understand what helps students learn the best.
So in that response, you mentioned the new purpose of education. So what will be the new purpose of education in a post-pandemic world?
Well, I think the first thing which education has mentioned about, but no education system has seriously done, is to educate children as human beings. I think the pandemic and also right now the geopolitical fight with different countries, this is like a reflection of us focusing too much on the economical being of students. Schools have been trying to prepare economical beings to get a job, to drive the global economy, to gain global competitiveness. But we forget how to live together. With pandemic, we recognize we live in a globalized world. We got to worry about kids in Africa, in Malaysia, in South America, every place. We have to be able to live together. And this is something about humanity. I think we have not figured out. And today, we still have the nationalism driving educational system to say, to teach you to become enemies of other countries or to defend yourself. I think that needs to change. We need to rethink about human values and humanity, what it matters. We're not just blind economical beings trying to make a dollar here, a dollar there. The second thing I think has changed is truly emphasize the value of creativity. Human beings, in the future, it's unpredictable. We cannot just be memorizing existing answers to existing problems for tomorrow. We have to create new solutions, adapt to unpredictability. And that is what schools don't do. Schools right now, most schools, I would say, teach children the existing answers, how to solve an existing problem. But what we need is children living uncertainty, living unpredictability. And that's very important. I think those two things I would right now highlight as part of the new purpose of education.
A fantastic answer. But I guess as you were giving that answer and perhaps as we've been talking, what would you suggest to principals who are listening or school leaders who are listening to this podcast right now that they do in the short term to try and take back the agency? You mentioned before about innovation being better placed in the classroom than at the top of the system. So what would a principal sort of have to do now to start thinking about this new way of teaching, this new way of educating young people for a purposeful life rather than just a job? Can you give us a few ideas about what people can do right now?
I think right now, the first thing, you know, could we start by asking every school and every teacher to work with every student to ask a student, what are you interested in and what are you good at? To develop some form of strength-based and passion-driven learning. At least partially, you know, if not entirely, but partially. You know, that's one of the things I think we can do now, you know, to get students understand their strengths, their weaknesses, and understand that they can create value for others and others can create value for them, to teach about human interdependence. And the second thing is actually, could we engage our students in global projects?
So in terms of advocating around national testing and some of those constraints that force schools to be really focused on a very dense and deep curriculum, how do we advocate to ministers and to system leaders to be able to create that space for the challenges that you outlined and the opportunities that exist for schools then to sort of make a more personalised approach to individual learning? Because engagement is a major issue and there are lots of young people who have become slightly more disengaged during this pandemic and some who have thrived. But so how would you sort of support school leaders to use their capacity to advocate to systems and governments about making some of these changes?
You know, one of the things I've tried to bring to the attention of leaders is look at education reforms over the past 30 years, 40 years. We probably have not made the kind of drastic improvement as we wished. So that at least gives us one piece of evidence to say what we did in educational research, investment, adjustment of the system, you know, there had not been massive major changes, you know. But even if there were major changes, the changes in terms of measurement will only measure literacy and numeracy. And so you know, PISA hasn't changed much. TIMSS hasn't changed much. This international study, I know NAPLA has not changed dramatically. In the U.S., NEEP, the National Assessment of Educational Program, changed much. So we should learn that it has not really worked well. Even if it did work well, did we help our students gain the so-called 21st century skills? I don't think we have that. I don't think we've done that. You know, there's so much people talking about new skills, new knowledge, but not many schools are doing that. There's no assessment of that. We need to change that. So I think we need to help our school leaders, if they are willing to look at the past, look at what the you know, the actions have taken, how much improvement there has been, not much. And also now we have this new opportunity to think about what the future actually needs. I think the pandemic has really accelerated the space of change of, for example, really remote work and global connection. So that's where we need to look at and say, how about our students become more globally connected, become more personalized, become their own learners? And also, of course, we need teachers to be prepared. We also need teachers who understand, who can become personal consultants, advisors, mentors to students, more than just being the instructor of knowledge and skills in the classroom.
We could talk all day. There's so much here that we really need to rethink and quickly. But in talking about that globalized world and young people being able to participate interculturally, the equity around access to technology is a really big issue. How can we provide that equity right across the world so that we can have a global society that interacts and learns anytime, anywhere. So what is it about that kind of obligation that I think, you know, the more wealthier countries have to making sure that the whole world sort of progresses?
Well, thanks so much. That's what I have become quite concerned. Big businesses, you know, are trying to Google, and I think Elon Musk, those guys are trying to create a global network access. So maybe in 5 years, everybody in the world can have access to the internet. But then, of course, everybody needs devices. They need either smart devices or computers or those connections. I think all developed countries has that responsibility to help provide that access. And once that access is made, educators from different places have to dive in. We've got several hundred million students who don't have schools, don't have teachers. What are we going to do? I think that's where, globally speaking, developed countries, kids in developed countries can become teachers, tutors, mentors. That's how we change the whole world. I think, you know, developed countries cannot just be selfish, wealthy by themselves. Our value has to at least partially be realized by helping others to develop their lives.
Thanks, Yong. I really appreciate it. As I said, it's been a great conversation, one that we haven't completed. I guess what I've learned from the pandemic was that teachers made the change when we had to pivot to online learning. It wasn't ministers, it wasn't system leaders. It all happened very quickly, and every teacher in every system across the world was able to find a new way of providing education to young people. And I think that's the exciting part. That's the bit that then gives us hope that that we can continue to make the necessary changes, because once teachers have the agency and have the capacity to undertake that innovation, then I think we really will see a different type of education emerging. So thank you for your time. It's been really great to talk to you again, and I look forward to continuing the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jim and Yong, for that insightful discussion. Talking Teaching is produced by Zane Kingy, Carl Smith, and myself. See you next time.